It's time for the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's Quarters every week, right here on VolQuest.
Hey, good Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, presented by our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions, local and trusted since 1999. That phone number for a free estimate, you can call 865-524-5888 or visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. I'm Mary Kane, alongside Rob Lewis, Grant Ramey, and Brent Hubbs. We got a lot of questions to get into, so appreciate you guys for sending those in. As always, not going to get to all of them, do apologize, but we'll get through as many as we can. So let's go ahead and start with a screen name that or a handle that I just love. Save the Troughs. Should we be worried about Nico, or is this just us finally seeing the pressure being put on a young quarterback? Brent.
Oh, I mean, worry. Like what? Like he can't get it done? Like he's a bust? I mean, no. I mean, is he going to win three Heisman trophies? No. But did anybody think he was going to win three Heisman trophies? I mean, and that's the thing. It's, and I'm not belittling the question in any way, shape, or form. But for as great as he was to start the year, you knew there was going to be moments where it wasn't where he played it. He had freshman moments and. Our first year starter moments. And I thought he had some of those moments on Saturday. He didn't get a lot of help around him. He didn't play very well at Arkansas. The question now to me, Grant, is how does he bounce back? How does he respond from this moving forward? Was he a train wreck or a disaster? No, but he's got to play better than he did on Saturday night. We'll find out how he responds to his first bout of adversity at the college level when he takes on the Florida Gators.
Yeah. I mean, be worried if Vanderbilt in November looks like Arkansas in September. Like I agree with Hubs 100%. He didn't play well. Players around him didn't play well. He didn't get a ton of help. But no, be worried. No, he's six starts into his career. Is that right? Five, six starts into his career. Like he's going to be a good quarterback. He's going to be fine. They're going to be better around him. The scheme could be better. All the play calling could be, everything could be better. But I didn't expect Nico to come in here and be a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback. You know, start number one, start number two this early on in his career. He's a redshirt freshman. Be patient. I know nobody has patience anymore, but that's what you're going to have, because he's going to have to show growth. If he doesn't show growth X number of starts down the line, you know, then maybe you get worried then.
Hey, Eric, here's what I do. Everybody who wants to sell their Nico stock at like 12:30 a.m. on Sunday morning, give it to me. I'll buy it all. I'll buy all of it.
Yeah, it's what we kind of said on the podcast after the game is like, I mean, yeah, I don't think any of us are ready to give up on Nico right now. I think he's still got so much to play for and such another level to get to. So, yeah, I agree with that.
Well, and here's the thing, too, and this is the world we're living in now, okay? The expectations for him are different than any other young quarterback in the history of Tennessee football, because everybody knows the NIL deal. Everybody knows the surroundings of the NIL thing. So he's not just a highly rated five-star player. He's a highly rated five-star player that came with a price tag. Now, that's the world of college football. Some people have no problem with that. Some people don't like it, okay? And so now there's a feeling of, okay, the expectations are ramped up even higher because are you getting your money's worth? Are you getting your money's worth? And that's just something that these guys and this generation of college football players who are high-profile guys are just going to have to deal with and manage and accept. That's another layer of criticism that's going to come to them that's higher than it's been to some previous guys at that position.
Stump Jumper says, Pierce had a much better game and seemed faster off the ball this week. Do you know if he was dealing with any type of nagging injuries, or did he finally just have things fall into place? Rob, I don't think anybody's 100% throughout the season, but I mean, I thought Pierce had been impacting games before, and I thought that he was getting close. He just finally got home one of those times on Saturday, and he just made a habit of kind of living in that backfield. I just thought he had a really good game.
Yeah, on the defensive line, I mean, your impact is not. I mean, the stats aren't going to capture that all the time, Pierce has been making impact. I mean. I clawed your shoulder off. You still have nail marks from the spin move in Charlotte that he pulled off. You see down on the goal line where I punched you in the shoulder. I mean, he's been taking double teams. Pierce is, you just don't rack up stats at that position. I mean, he's been a factor every game.
K Canada Vol says, based on the reaction of the GQ, it seems clear the expanded playoff puts make-or-break pressure on programs to make the postseason tournament. Are we going to look at coaches who last at least 3 years to be long-timers now, Grant?
I mean, be careful what you wish for, because you've seen a revolving door of coaches at Tennessee the last 15 years, and maybe this question is specifically to Tennessee or about Josh Heupel or whatever, but, I mean, you got to be careful what you wish for, because the next guy you hire is no guarantee to be better than the guy you're trying to replace and run out the door. I think it's a cautionary tale as old as time, because we've watched it play out up close, that if you have a ton of turnover in your program, you know, you're kind of resetting, you're kind of setting yourself back every time you have to make a change. So, yeah, there's going to be more pressure because it's 12 teams and everybody wants a spot in the playoff and have a ticket to the dance and all that stuff. But you better be careful with how you go about it and how quickly you make changes, because it's tough to overcome those changes if you don't make a home run hire every single time.
Yeah, Brent, I think that benchmark is going to be the college football playoffs every year, right? It's going to be, did you make it? Did you not? And if you rack up, you know, 2, 3, 4 seasons, that's going to kind of be that benchmark to say, okay, well, we need to make a move. I absolutely agree with the question.
Well, I think it depends on what program you're talking about. I mean,
Power Four, yeah.
Right. I mean, but not every Power Four. I mean, not every Power Four team is going to have that vibe and going to have that feeling. So I think it's with, you know, what program within your Power Four, you know, believes that and thinks that way. There's absolutely more pressure. There's no question, because that's the benchmark now, right, Rob? I mean, that's the standard that, if you're a blue blood or if you're a tradition rich college football program, that's the standard that you're set for yourself. I've always said this, it's never about who you fire. It's about who you hire. It's easy to get rid of somebody, but it's about who you replace them with, and you better make sure you get it right. And I think with the calendar, the way it is, Rob, it's going to be harder than ever to make change. I mean, you're not going to be able to go get rid of your coach and go hire a consistent playoff bound coach and hold your roster together, because the timeline is just not going to add up very well. It's going to make it really challenging to see what happens when schools go to make a change in the end of November and the four candidates they want to talk to are in the playoffs and they're not going to be available to you till sometime January. That's different.
Yeah, that part is different. But I mean, just to the original question, I mean, I think people are going to, in the SEC, at least, you know, the top half of the SEC, not even the top half, top 75% of the SEC. You go 3 years, three or 4 years without making the playoff. Yeah, I mean, I agree with the original question. People are going to be, you know, out. It's that we haven't really fleshed that out, but I think that is probably one of the offshoots of the whole playoff thing. I mean, I think fans' patience with coaches are going to get a little shorter. Not already super short, but I think
not that there's a lot of grace to begin with, right?
Yeah, but I think that, you know, having that tangible, you know, bottom line, you know, the playoff, I wonder if that's not going to even, you know, make this a tougher gig for coaches.
And there will be pressure for playoff teams as well. Like, how many times would Penn State and James Franklin have made a 12-team playoff in the last X number of years? A bunch. But if you don't win a game in that playoff, if you don't advance, then that's the pressure on him, and you're going to be out if you can't do that. I mean, Georgia's and the Alabama's, if you're not advancing to the semifinals or a title game, there's going to be pressure there. So it's just a different kind of pressure that kind of trickles down to everybody in this kind of new era, I guess.
Yeah, and Jim Harbaugh, how long did it take him to beat Ohio State? And then now he's got it rolling. Now Ryan Day, people are like, yo, got to beat Michigan, man. Like, it kind of like that pressure.
Well, and I think the other thing, too, is the amount of money that's involved in all this is so big now. I mean, the amount of money that's being invested into the college football programs. I mean, you got 70 staff members or 50, whatever your number is now. I mean, there's guys in coaching polos all over the sidelines. It almost feels like there's one per player on an SEC game out there. You're asking for more and more money, right? More and more money is being spent. And with that comes more and more resources, but also more and more pressure to win. And that's nothing about the evolution of where college football is going to take any pressure or alleviate any pressure off of coaches and the expectations that they have.
Yeah, and I'm going to, Eric, I'm going to see if Herbert won't give you this homework assignment. for next week. But I bet, seriously, how many SEC coaches make more than an NFL head coach right now? I mean, I don't know the answer, but I bet several. And mm-hmm. I bet 20 years ago, I bet the answer was zero.
Yeah, there's a few for sure. Tony Vitello also makes more than, you know, some Major League Baseball managers.
Most MLB managers.
Yeah. How can we get defenses to show their hand to help Nico Reed run pass based on the numbers in the box? A 3-2-6 varieties make things harder. Brent, I think if Tennessee were to send some motion pre-snap, I think that would kind of allow them to show the defense's hand a little bit. And that's just something minor, but, you know, send a guy in motion, you know, motion him in or motion him across the line of scrimmage or whatever that case is to show what the defense has in terms of who's got that guy and all that. And then from there, you can kind of say, okay, well, we see that. Let's check into this or whatever the case may be. I just thought when I read this question, I thought motion might be something that could help a little bit in that regard.
Yeah, I think eye candy can help as for sure. I think the other thing too is, and I've had this discussion with a couple of people this week. I mean, everybody wants to look and go back to 21 and 22 when their receivers running 5-10 yards wide open. Well, why were they running 5-10 yards wide open? Were they, I mean, legitimately a second faster in the 40 time than the corner that was covering them? No. I mean, there was so much confusion that Tennessee created for the defense because of the tempo that they played at, that teams couldn't get lined up. They couldn't get calls in. That's how guys got wide open. You know, there was just a lot of bust out there. Tennessee's not generating those busts because of the tempo. I just feel like, Grant, that for Tennessee's offense to be explosive, they've got to create more chaos for the defense. It feels like the defense is creating chaos for Tennessee's offense right now. I just think you got to find some tempo in there as well as a little eye candy.
They have to force the issue instead of having the issue forced on them, I guess. Who was that in 2021 at Alabama? Was that Velus that just ran past an Alabama corner because the Alabama corner had his head turned looking, trying to communicate with the rest of the defense? Yeah, I would agree. Get back to going as fast as you can and try to force the issue more than letting the defense. And I agree with what Eric said to start with. The motion thing, that was the first thing that came to mind. I think that's the most obvious in terms of trying to get a read on a man or a zone or what you're going to get from the defense. But I mean, more than anything, yeah, go as fast as you can and get back to kind of forcing the issue.
Well, and Eric, I would say this is a big one. And Eric said this on the round table the other day, first down, they've got to be better on first down. I mean, when we're talking about tempo, I mean, it's a keep it simple, stupid, you know, situation. I mean, it's super simple, but they've got to get more second and fours, second and threes, you know, second twos to get that rolling.
ZJS Vols says Jason Jenkins has been up there with some of the biggest surprises this year. He keeps making plays with limited snaps. Who would have to reduce snaps for Jason Jenkins' role to increase? That would have to be Brent, Dominic Bailey, Tyree West, that strong side defensive end where Jason kind of goes in there. And of course, you know, if they're in Rabbit's package, those guys can bump down, but that position is the Tyree West and the Dominic Bailey.
Yes.
Let's go to K Hensley 1062. Do you expect to see any new offensive tackle combinations, or is Campbell and Hurd firmly ingrained as long as they're healthy?
I don't think we know the answer to that. I mean, I think it depends on how they play. I mean, you know, it's you hear this coach's line from coaches every week, right? Like you know. Every day you have competition. You got to go out and compete every day. And if you're not playing up to the standard, then you got to do whatever you can to help your quarterback and help your offense be successful. And if that means, you know, that those two guys, you know, or one of those two guys is not playing as much or doesn't start or whatever, that's, you know, that's the decision the coaching staff has to make. And that's why they get paid a good amount of money. I mean, Campbell didn't play every snap Saturday night in Fayetteville. So I think that remains to be determined at this point. I think it's based on how you play.
Another question here from the poster. Do you think Heupel sometimes coaches emotionally? We talk about players can't be getting too high, too low, but when it's frustrating night, it seems to affect his play calling and decision-making and then snowball from there. What do you guys think? Does he coach emotionally sometimes?
I think 100%, but I mean, I'm not really, I've noticed it more in things like, you know, trying to punch one in late against Missouri as opposed to, you know, having a making a bad fourth and one call, you know, in the second quarter. What do you guys think?
I see it more like going for it on fourth down on your own side of the 50 on the road at Alabama. Like that's what I see is kind of like coaching emotionally more than, you know, that's what kind of stands out to me. I mean, I just think not calling a timeout there at the end was just a mistake. I don't think that had anything to do with being emotional. I just think that was a mistake.
100%, Eric. I agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the adjustments for offensive coaches who become head coaches is to take the coordinator hat off and coach the game holistically with all three phases involved. Because when you're an offensive coordinator, all you do is you're sitting in your office, Grant, and you're drawing up home run ball plays, right? You're drawing up touchdown plays. That's what you're thinking about. How are we going to score 50 this week? How are we going to do this? That when you become a head coach, you have to think, all right, is this the right move here? Do I need to do this? Do we need to take a shot here? Do we need to play field position and all those types of things? And I think that's a learning curve. I think Josh Heupel has learned in some regards in that way. You look at the Texas A&M game last year. He played a different style of football. Now, the week later, he went for it twice in his own territory against Alabama, and I thought that was a mistake both times. Oklahoma, he punted. I mean, the first punt he had in the Oklahoma game, I thought for sure he was going to go for that ball, go for it there. Played field position, trusted his defense. I think does frustration affect you a little bit as a play caller? I mean, it probably does when things aren't going well. But I can't sit here and go, man, you know, he called a terrible quarter of football because he was emotional or he was too frustrated. I don't think that's the case.
I don't think you want to be too emotional, but I also don't think you want to be too, I don't know, stiff and glued to a certain plan.
Yeah, like be flexible.
The end of the first half, I don't understand not kicking that field goal, and I'll never understand it because, yeah, maybe he doesn't miss it, but what do you have to lose? I mean, you might as well take a knee there because you're not going to advance the ball at that point to where you're going to score or put yourself in better field goal position. I can't remember what the time and situation was, but it felt like, you know, he had kind of bombed him, Max Gilbert, in pregame because we were sitting there watching him. Yeah, and
he kicked it really well in pregame.
Right. So, and it just felt like, what do you have to lose? I don't understand that. So I don't think you want to be too emotional, but also I don't think you want to be too glued and stiff to whatever plan you have going into the game.
Yeah, Grant, I'm glad you brought that up. I think that's an interesting point because I was rewatching some of that stuff before we started recording this because I wanted to look at some of the defensive structures. Made an interesting decision there. They're right on the cusp of field goal range, and they had timeouts. You thought maybe you might run it and get five more yards to where you're more maybe a little more comfortable in field goal range and then take a shot, and if it's not there, you kick a field goal. Instead, they had – two pass attempts, and one of them ended up being a penalty on John Campbell that messed you up there. But on the second down play, I thought there was a chance maybe you should run it and try to secure the field goal spot and then take a shot if you want to, hoping you wouldn't get a penalty. I was a little surprised at that play call. I don't know that was an emotional or lack of emotional play call, but I thought – I don't know that that game feels a ton different if it's 3-3 at the half, because Arkansas certainly felt like they let points get away. I'm sure if they were only up 3-0, but to be 3-3, still 3 at the end of the half, Rob, and get the ball to start the second half. I mean, boy, as bad as you played in the first half offensively, if you'd have stole 3 points there at the end of the first half, that would have felt like a pretty decent win for your offensive side of the football.
Well, I mean, especially in hindsight, when you go down and score touchdowns in your first two possessions of the third quarter, I mean, that would have been – I mean, and again, you who knows if it works out that way, but if it did and you're up 17-3 at that point, totally different game.
And if you got the ball with a minute left and you're down 19-17 and you throw a 42-yard pass to Dante Thornton and take a timeout after the play and then kick a field goal.
Just pour salt. Grant, you have the salt shaker? Can we see it?
We got to move on.
You need a salt shaker GIF. Or you just pour it in the wound.
regardless to just talk about penalties, right? I mean, that penalty there that Brent brought up, that was huge. That was a huge penalty. If that doesn't happen, maybe you do kick that field goal, you have more confidence. But to your guys' point about Gilbert in pregame, I mean, AP turned around and told me and Grant, he was like, I mean, look at this guy. He is booming them. He was
on the logo. He was on the 50, yeah. on the back of the Razorback, and he was kicking it through it pretty easily.
Yeah, and you know, there's fans and there's snap and there's a hold and all that, but I mean, you know, he was showing off that leg. We'll get one more before we take a quick timeout. Let's go to Captain Hobbit. Do you think Glenn Ellerbe has what it takes to A, turn the season's line around, and B, breed a culture of sustained success with the position group moving forward into the future? A lot of people upset right now, you know, protecting the quarterback. That's not just offensive line, but a lot of talk about the offensive line, obviously. Is this team good enough under Glenn Ellerbe, Brent, to turn things around in the short term and in the long term?
Well, I mean, I don't think we have any evidence to say that they can't, given their history of offense and the success that they've had, you know, with Glenn Ellerbe and Josh Heupel together. But look, this conference is different. I mean, this is not UCF. This is not MTSU. I mean, this is a physical big boy league. They've got to develop better at that position with the kids that they've recruited. I don't think you can be in a transfer portal for three or four starters on a repeated basis on your offensive line. They clearly have to develop, and they've clearly got to improve where they're at there. I mean, you know, everybody talks about 22, Grant. Nobody talks about not having Darnell Wright. He was, I'm not saying he was as important as Hendon Hooker, but he was a nice piece to the puzzle that Tennessee is not. They don't have one of those, you know, obviously, and they're not playing well right now.
I would say no if there weren't those two drives to start the second half where they run the ball down Arkansas's throat. And the second drive, that was a lot of Arkansas penalty yardage that contributed to that. I understand that, but still, if they didn't play as well as they did against North Carolina State, NC State's not a very good football team. I recognize that. That defense is not great. But that was a lot of what Tennessee did, too, in terms of their scheme, play calling, how they ran the football in that game. So I think there's been signs of life that they can build on. And maybe it goes back to stuff AP was talking about in the Monday night chat about, you know, Lance Hurd hadn't played in 28 days and all that stuff. And I think they can maybe get back in shape or whatever they need to do down the line to be a better offensive line. I think you've seen glimpses of it. It's just about turning those glimpses into more than just that.
There might be a question on this that I wrote down and we just hadn't got to yet, but Brent, were you maybe surprised that Davis didn't play more than he did? I know he was in there on that second touchdown drive of the third quarter there. He played maybe another series or two. I thought that we'd see him play more, especially when you can see that, you know, Lance Hurd is kind of battling through it, hadn't played in a month, right? I was surprised that, you know, Dane didn't play more. Maybe we see that moving forward, kind of a three-man rotation. I understand Dane Davis did not have his best game at Oklahoma the last time out.
Well, yeah, I mean, here's the thing about Lance Hurd. I'm not making any excuses for Lance Hurd, okay? You know, he had a knee procedure in July, which obviously you rehab that. That affects, you know, the getting in shape. But you've got to manage your diet. You've got to do everything you can to help yourself be in shape. The thing that I did not take into account probably as a transfer player with Lance Hurd is Lance Hurd was a half rung above being a high school recruit when he transferred to Tennessee. I mean, he had played a year of football at LSU, but he had watched, right? Like he had not played a lot of football. Whereas a guy like Jermon McCoy, Rob, I mean, he played against Oregon. He played against Southern Cal. I mean, he was a starter. He played hundreds of snaps, whereas Lance Hurd is still really young in his football career. I don't know that I took that into account. I just saw it as, okay, plug and play. There's your left tackle. Plug and play, and away you go. I think there's probably a steeper learning curve, not just with the offense, but a learning curve to playing, you know, four quarters of football in the SEC, that he got an ugly baptism of Saturday night in Fayetteville, Arkansas, because it's the first time he had done that in his career. He has to be better. I'm not making an excuse for him. Okay. And if he can't be better, then you do have to play somebody else. Okay. But Campbell's got to play better. Spraggan's got to be better. All of them have to play better. I do think it should be noted, though, Lance Hurd's pretty young as an offensive lineman in college football in terms of experience, and I think it showed up.
I mean, he's Nico. He's, what, five starts into his college career? No, less than that, I guess, because he missed a couple games. So, I mean, even younger. But, yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, that was his first SEC experience, other than Mollett duty at LSU, right? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, if he had a start at LSU.
He had a start, but I think it was against, like, Army. I think he played a little, but, I mean, to your point, he was not a starter. Like, he was a reserve, yeah.
Well, and I'll say this surprised me because I was wanting to write, you know, a paragraph for, you know, something super negative about the offensive line in general. And it's been pass protection. I mean, it doesn't look great. They're fourth in the SEC in rushing in conference-only games. Throw out NC State, Kent State. I'm just talking about in SEC games. Tennessee's averaging, it's like 166 a game, which caught me off guard. It didn't feel like they were that good against Oklahoma. And, you know, outside of Dylan Sampson's run in the third quarter, the ground game, it's not been as bad as it – maybe you guys had a different impression. I felt like they had been struggling a lot worse than that.
It's been tougher, obviously. You're playing league games. It's supposed to be tougher, and everybody wants to throw out the qualifier. Like, well, if you take away that 53-yard run, I mean, I get that, but, I mean, it still happened, right? Like,
yeah, you can't – what about that 53-yard run, you know, Auburn had? You can't take that out.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree. I think the run game has not been bad. It's just not been – they haven't been gashing them, right? I mean, how many times have we seen this? You know, go back to years past, like – you know, getting 12, getting 8, you know, getting 7, and kind of running with that tempo. It's been more, in my opinion, through these two SEC games, man, they're just having to grind it out, and especially at Oklahoma.
And those chunk plays aren't there, and it feels different.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah. You know, need to get that back on track as well. We got plenty more questions we'll jump back into, but first, let's get a word from our proud sponsors. That is Exterior Home Solutions, and get Neyland Loud.
Get Neyland Loud this football season with Exterior Home Solutions, East Tennessee's first choice for exterior renovations.
That phone number is 865-524-5888, online at exteriorhomesolutions.com, been local and trusted since 1999. We'll get back into the questions here. 45-5 says, I'm not complaining, I'm genuinely curious. Where are the deep choice routes with Hyatt and Tillman killed on those a year ago? Where have they gone? QB keeps, even Joe ran more in SEC play. The zone read and outside runs, everything's been between the tackles except for that one Bishop run on Saturday night. Where is some of this gone in the offense?
Great question.
Yeah, go ahead, Grant. If you've got an answer to that one, fire away, buddy.
I don't have an answer. I think the deep stuff is tough to do when you don't trust your protection, you don't have a ton of it. If your QB's running for his life every now and then, QB keeps, I agree with. They need more of that. They need to give the defense more stuff to look at. Obviously, you don't want to get Nico hurt, but at the same time, you have to try to balance your look and kind of keep the defense kind of on the back foot a little bit in terms of what to expect from Nico. And the outside run stuff, I kind of agree with too. The last couple games, it does feel like it's all been between the tackles. It felt like they're a little bit more variety, I guess, against NC State in terms of the way they tried to run it. I think you got to kind of get back to that and be more creative and have different looks. But I think you can't take a ton of deep shots if you don't think your quarterback's going to be able to drop back and have a clean pocket to be able to look downfield.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to take deep shots, I think they've got to take outside deep shots, you know, just a takeoff route. You know, like the one they missed with Squirrel. I think the deep crossers that take time to develop makes it really hard for protection. Mm-hmm. I think Tennessee's tried to look for that a little much. I mean, I think that they can take more, quote, vertical shots outside the hash. I don't think Tennessee, outside the numbers, I don't think Tennessee is taking as many chances there. Throw it up, see if you get a PI call, you know. I think you can do that even with suspect protection. I think you could throw some of those as opposed to waiting on the guy who lines up a step from the out of bounds marker and you're trying to hit him over the middle on a deep square end cross. Now when you do that, like you did at Oklahoma, it's beautiful when it's protected up and it looks exactly the way it's supposed to look and it goes, you say, why not do that every time? I just don't know that you feel like they can do that all the time. As for the quarterback run thing, Rob, I've said it all week long. He's getting hit a bunch as it is. I think when you're looking at numbers, he has to be another number in the run game Nico does that the defense has to account for. I don't think anybody's accounting for him right now. I don't think there's a real worry about him pulling it right now based on what Tennessee has put on tape through five games this season.
And we're not in the room, but I mean, don't you guys think that he's getting coached up that way? I mean, just, I'm not saying it's a negative. I'm not being critical. I just be careful. Don't take a shot. Go down.
Yeah.
I mean, just because of the depth chart. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he's hearing a lot of that. And I'm not saying it's wrong for him to hear that, but I'm with you, Hubbard. I mean, I think you're leaving a lot on the table if you're not using the legs.
Yeah, I don't think he should run it. I don't think he should call 15, 18 runs a game for him or anything like that. But I think that has to be a part of your arsenal, because I think that's key to what you're trying to do and what you want to do offensively. I mean, how many did he run it against North Carolina State when the game was pretty much done? They ran him a couple of times there. He got blasted on an option play.
That quarterback draw, 31-yard touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, so, again, I think it has to be a part of what you do, particularly, maybe you go into that game thinking, all right, we're not going to use this. That's not going to be, we want to keep him upright, we want to protect him. But when you get in the fourth quarter and you're trying to put the game away and you need a first down, you call it, man, right? If you think that can get you a first down, all right, get the first down, slide, get down, we'll play the next play. But, we've got to go win the football game here. That's what they did with Hendon Hooker in 22. They tried to protect him, and then they got into some games where they said, man, we just got to have it here. I know you're beat up a little bit, but go get us what you got to get us and get first downs and move the sticks, and let's keep playing.
You can coach smart, can't coach scared, and win big-time football games.
When you get the ball back with 4 minutes left and a one-point lead and you need a first down, and you probably shouldn't throw it on second and third down. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Back to the salt. Sorry. Keep going.
Well, the second down play call was a good call. He's got to throw the ball. I mean,
that's true.
I mean, squirrels open there. I don't have a huge issue with that, from the standpoint of that one was, I mean, that was, he was open. That was just a bad throw. I mean, that was low and in the dirt. And that's a day one early install pass that should have been completed there. But yeah, I mean, you didn't exactly manage the clock leading up to that play either. I mean, now you want to go fast,
And right.
That was my whole thing, especially after the game. It's like, what are we doing here? Like, I'm all about tempo. That's what this offense is, but you're not going fast all game. And then at the end, when you need to milk, it's like, what are you doing? I mean, you're snapping it with 30 seconds left. Oh, Taproot 92. When will the 2025 football schedule be released? People got weddings and trips to plan.
December, right? The 2024 schedule came out in December, so I'd assume that's the case again.
Yeah.
We'll go with December. Hooker to Hyatt. Larry Johnson's looked pretty good in limited action. Do you see any personnel changes on the offensive line? Yeah, I think we asked this a couple of moments ago, actually, to be determined. But what were y'all's thoughts on Larry Johnson against Oklahoma, his first true action and snaps that were meaningful?
Could have been worse.
I thought he played well at Oklahoma, better than I expected, but not to the point where I'd expect a, changing the starting lineup.
He played well enough they played well enough on the offensive line that when they got the lead, Josh Heupel pulled the throttle back on it and said, let's get out of here. And I'm not trying to knock them, but I mean, they were not, I mean, they changed the way that they played that game in the second half because they didn't feel like they could protect anybody. And they had a big enough lead. They thought they could get home with the way their defense was playing. So I don't think he did poorly. He played better than I thought he would play because I didn't think he played very well early in the year when they put him in some mop-up duty, Chattanooga and some things like that. But I don't think he dominated or anything like that at Oklahoma either. So they have to just play better across the board. I mean, it is the tackles. They didn't play well, but pass protection at the guard spot's not been great. Pass protection at the running back spot's not been good enough. Pass protection at the tight end spot at times has not been good enough. They have to do a lot of things better. It's not just yank a guy out, plug another guy in, and it's fixed. That's not where they're at. And that's why I think they have to spend time tweaking some things offensively, Grant, to help them. because you can't just slide one out and plug another one in and say, hey, we're good to go. We fixed the problem here, because you're still going to have those same concerns because your protection issues are in multiple layers in multiple places. So get it out of his hands faster, roll them out, do different things to help your pass protection as opposed to just changing personnel.
And what did Heupel say about the tackles on Monday? We love them. We believe in those guys. What I can't remember what the exact quote was, but something along those lines. And maybe that's like the famous vote of confidence for a quarterback or a head coach that you hear right before something happens. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think he still is legit and believes in those guys. And yes, I 100% agree with what Hub said. Running backs got to be better in pass protection. Tight ends got to be better, Chip, and interior offensive line. It's everybody, and they got to scheme it better. They got to play call better. They got to do everything a little bit better.
Yeah, anybody thinking it was just Lance Hurd the other night didn't watch the game. He was bad, but there was a lot of bad there across the board. And as you pointed out, specifically running backs and pass pro.
If you have any pride as a competitor, and you watch that tape of your cell phone film, then you went to the practice field this week, put in some serious work to get better. Extra conditioning, whatever you needed to do, extra film study. If you watched that and you went, okay, that was all right. We did all right. We just didn't make a play or two here. Then you're not got all the competitive juices that you need to have. Because I think that the pride in that should tell you, I got work to do and I need to go get better. We'll see how this team responds on Saturday.
Dylan Sampson mentioned that this team's preparation during the bye week was lackadaisical. Coach Heupel, when asked, said that he thought the preparation was good. In years past, Coach Heupel has called out poor preparation. What is your take on the differing views regarding the prep for Arkansas? I was sitting in there at that postgame press conference and he said that, and I was kind of like, okay. I mean, I'm not calling him a liar at all. I wasn't at practice, so I don't know. I also thought maybe, Rob, like, the dude just lost a tough game, right? I mean, dude just lost a game, and you're having to sit here and answer questions about it. I mean, you don't want to be in that position to begin with. I'm not calling him a liar. I'm just saying, like, when he said that, I was kind of like, oh, well, okay. I mean, just lost a game. What else you can say? I mean, you know, Heupel said that he thought that – he specifically said, guys, help me. I think he said last Wednesday's practice was really good.
Really good.
Yeah, really good. He didn't say the other days, but he said last Wednesday was really good, so I don't know if that means Tuesday and Thursday was bad. I don't know.
I think fans latch on to stuff like that. I mean,
I agree.
I mean, they're just looking for answers. I mean, it's mm-hmm. Saturday night. It's midnight. Tennessee just, you know, fourth-rate Tennessee just played like crap.
Yeah, and sorry to cut you off, but Keenan Peely comes in right after him and says, I can't speak for him, but I thought it was great. I think
nothing but great things to say about Dylan Sampson. He doesn't mm-hmm. know how the secondary practiced last week, you know, what they looked like in sessions 1 through 8 on the practice field. And no disrespect to Dylan Sampson at all, but I think fans hear that kind of stuff and they love it, and I get it. But you know, Tennessee played like crap. I mean, I don't really think it had much to do with how they practiced Wednesday of the open week.
Yeah, I mean, my take on that is it's probably somewhere in the middle. Mm-hmm. I think Josh Heupel's answer on Monday was he gave that answer to, hey, let's not drive that narrative to anything. It's time to flush and move on. You know, to his credit, he answered the timeout question. You know, the three-man front stuff was obviously moving forward, because you're going to see that some more along the way. But I don't think on Monday Josh Heupel was interested in doing a lot of regurgitating of what happened on Saturday. He was trying to get his football team moving forward. So my guess is it probably wasn't as good as Josh Heupel indicated in the press conference. It probably wasn't as awful as Dylan Sampson made it sound at 12:45 in the morning in Fayetteville, Arkansas, after a loss. They probably didn't handle themselves as maturely as they needed to during the bye week in certain instances. They won't be the first team ever to do that.
And they won't be the last.
You just got to find a way, Grant. If you're going to be a championship caliber team, you got to find a way to win when you don't have your best stuff. And Tennessee couldn't do that. They couldn't finish it off in the fourth quarter.
And you better find a way to win getting past a game where you don't have your best stuff and you're coming home to face a rival and all that stuff. Now, shout out to Heupel for saying, I regret not taking a timeout and admitting his mistake, when other coaches who shall not be named might reference a football chart or something like that and say they made the right decision. At least he just straight up admitted it. Hey, I made a mistake, and move on. And that's what his football team has to do this week.
Yeah, it goes back to what Brent said. When you have 70 assistant coaches and polos there on the side, somebody should be like, yo, time out, time out.
Eric, I'm glad you worked the polo in. because that's Hover's contractually obligated to mention the guys in the orange polos.
Don't you think there's a lot of them over there in
the Hover? I do. I mean, I just
maybe not. Maybe it's just me.
Hover, there's a million. I just wish I could get some of that bacon and company money that you're getting every time you mention that.
I was actually on the field in Fayetteville on the end of the field where the play started on the 42-yard pass to Dante, and then I had to walk behind the Tennessee bench to get to the other end of the field as play continued, and I saw the clock keep going. I thought, you're not going to take a timeout, Josh? Maybe next time I just hop over the bench and be like, you going to take a timeout here? Or
maybe that can be you. He's going to throw you a polo. You get over there.
I'm not much of a polo guy.
This is a great question for Hubs. Uptown Ball says, since nobody's asked, how does the field look?
It's in good shape. It is in good shape. I've had some people send me pictures this week of how the field looks. I don't think the field will be a question at all when Tennessee comes running through the tee to take on Florida on Saturday night. So they've had plenty of sunlight. They've had water when they first put it down. So I think everything's great with the field. That's the least of the worries on campus right now.
You got to give them the dad joke and say it looks like it's about 120 yards. It's green. It's pretty wide. Go from there.
In other news.
You're much more creative than I am, Grant.
In other news, Lindsey Nelson Stadium looks like a big old sandbox right now. Was over there the other day. let's see here. Trillville 7 says, if David Sanders were on the roster today, do you think you'd be starting at a tackle spot for the Vols?
I don't know. I mean, again, I go back to what I was talking about Lance Hurd earlier. I mean, not a ton of experience. I looked up Lance Hurd. I was wrong. He had a start, or he played 59 snaps against Auburn. He played 195 snaps last year at LSU in his career, and he's played 176 snaps at Tennessee and has missed, what, two games? David Sanders is an elite prospect. How it translates when he gets over here, you know, we'll find out. I mean, I think there's certainly a thought process that – he's a plug and play guy and he can step in and go, and we'll see where Lance Hurd is a year from now. We'll see where Jesse Perry is a year from now. What does Jeremiah Hurd look like a year from now? What does Bennett Warren look like a year from now? What does David Sanders look like as he arrives in January? I think there's certainly high expectations for him to be there, but this is going to be a very different looking offensive line in a lot of ways. And Some guys who have been brought in from the high school ranks are going to need to step in and play next year. I don't think you're just going to go get a bunch of bodies over them out of the portal and say, hey, this is my offensive line. I think you've got to look at some of these guys you have on your roster, and you got to get them ready to play, and you got to go play. And I would put David Sanders into that category. Would he play right now if you said, hey, drive to Knoxville, put on a uniform, and play Saturday against Florida? Probably not. But what does he look like come next April after he goes through spring practice? We'll see. I mean, we've seen some freshmen in this day and age of football handle themselves okay at the tackle position. Has it been always pretty? No, but Juwan Jennings was pretty good, right? I mean, there's been some – not Juwan Jennings, Juwan James.
Juwan James.
He's pretty good. It happens.
But okay. That's a good comp for him, for Sam. I mean, because he's not like – an overwhelming physical like Jonathan Ogden. I mean, he's not 6'8", 350, but he's very much Juwan James's. What, like 6'5", 285, 290? Probably not that, very, very light on his feet.
Yeah. I mean, and listen, I think he will absolutely be in the conversation and could very well be a starter at right tackle next year. I mean, he could be. He could be a starter at left tackle. I mean, we'll see what it looks like in spring practice. But I don't, just because he has five stars beside his name doesn't mean he's an automatic lock, stock, plug and play immediate deal. He's got to go earn it. And we'll see what he looks like after he gets here and goes through 6 or 8 months of training and gets ready for his first fall camp.
Hard Hat Vol, who has a more difficult time of snapping and clearing, fan base or the team? Grant, I sure as heck hope the team can do it. And I would wholeheartedly say it's the fan base that has a tougher job.
Well, I was going to say the fan base and be judgmental, but I've talked about the field goal in the first half, not kicking it to end the first half, not having that 3 points at the end of the game, not getting a first down when you get the ball back with 4 minutes left. So clearly I haven't moved on either. I can't tell you how many screenshots or, Twitter film room breakdowns of Tennessee, Arkansas, and what's gone wrong. And it feels like they've picked it apart with a fine tooth comb. And yeah, when you lose a game and it hurts like that, I don't blame you, but I assume the team is moved on and ready to go and ready to change the conversation.
Over under 250 passing yards for Nico this week. I'm going to be positive and say over. What say you guys?
I mean, just based on what he's done in SEC play so far, I would say under.
I would say under, and that's not a problem. I think if you rush for 220, you're in a pretty good spot. Like, this Tennessee football team is good at running the football, and they need to continue to be good at running the football, and they need to continue establishing the run. And I think Nico's going to be fine. He's going to be a great quarterback, you know, down the road and as he progresses. But right now, you don't have to force the issue. You have a really good running back. You've seen it. Lean on it. And this is a Florida defense that's ranked 13th or 14th or worse in the SEC in scoring defense, total defense, run defense, pass defense. Like, establish the run. You're at home and go from there. And if he doesn't throw for 250, that's fine if you can run it for a bunch.
Let's get to two more here. Quickly, the ranking wants to know, is there an injury update on Brew and Squirrel, knowing that the first injury report came out last night, time of this recording? Heard a local radio host say that he expected them to be out a while. Brew and Squirrel, Brent, this time of the week, have you heard anything different than what we've already communicated on the board?
No, I mean, I'm where we've been on the board all week. I think Brew's going to do everything he can to try to go. We'll see what that looks like. I could totally see that one being questionable game time decision on Saturday. It would be how that progression would go for the injury report. I'll be surprised if Squirrel can play this week. That I think Squirrel's going to miss some time, given what that looked like and the fact that he has sling on his arm when he left the field. And that one felt like that one's going to be a little longer recovery. I think Brew did everything he could to try to get back in the game. Probably didn't have everything they needed to pad that up and make it comfortable enough for him to catch the ball. You've got a week here to create a padding for him to make that work. And so I think Brew's going to do everything he can to try to play. We'll see what that looks like.
And we'll end on this one from Hoover Vol. Arkansas cut through the zone defense like a warm knife through butter. Florida destroyed the Vols in the middle of the field last year. And two of the Gators' first three drives were for over 7 minutes long. So what can Tim Banks do to shore up the middle of the field when running zone this week? And Grant, that's something that, you know, Tennessee really struggled with last year. It was trying to keep everything in front of you. And Graham Mertz, that completes, I think at the time he completed 74% of his passes. At this point in the season, he's completing 77% of the passes. He's an accurate passer. He has been at Florida. What can Tim Banks do to try to shore up the middle of the field and not allow him to have one of those days?
Attack, to quote Johnny Majors, pressure. Go ahead, Hubs. Let's hear that.
No, go ahead.
It's like you're Judy.
I was going to say, where does your Barney Fife impression stop and your Johnny Majors impression start? That's a thin line.
The Barney's a little higher pitched than Coach Majors was.
Pressure the quarterback, get home, be able to move the line of scrimmage with four rushers and be able to drop guys, just mix up looks as much as you can and don't let Graham Mertz do this. I mean, that's what kills Tennessee is those 7 minute drives. I mean, we saw it in the first quarter at Arkansas. You drive all the way down the field, you take 8 minutes off the clock. And if you can't answer immediately on the offensive side, then it gets kind of tough and it goes from there. So they're going to have to eliminate this stuff. I think it starts with the pressure and this defensive line, the defensive front, moving the line of scrimmage, pressuring the quarterback, and getting home when they do pressure the quarterback.
Yeah, I agree. Especially like if you're playing zone, typically you're going to be running four-man front. Get home four-man. If you're in zone, the backers on that first drive you referenced, man, they ran some mesh. And I mean, there was one where Keenan Peely and Aaron Carter both went with one and then opened up the other. Like, you got to stay home. They eye candy, right? I mean, you see it, you communicate it, you butt it up, you pass it. And then look, because if you're passing something out, something's probably coming in to take its spot, right? So stay at home. Don't get confused with the candy in front of you. And more than anything, again, going back to what you said, if you're in zone, get home with four. And I think this defensive line is talented enough to make things difficult getting home with four. And then you can ramp it up and you can blitz and everything. And typically when you're blitzing, you're running a little bit more man in the back end.
Yeah, I think Arkansas, I'll give Bobby Petrino, who's a good play caller, credit. I thought they did some nice things to take advantage of Tennessee's heavy focus on Green as a runner. The inside trap that they ran with the, you know, with the H-back or whatever you want to call that play was a good play call. I mean, I think Tennessee was so heavily and rightfully so focused on Green and his legs that I thought Arkansas took a bit of advantage of that with some misdirection stuff. And then I think, you know, Tennessee's linebackers were probably not deep enough in zone depth because they were worried about angles on the perimeter for a mobile quarterback. I do think this group of linebackers is much better in coverage than 2 years ago, or last year, excuse me, when Tennessee took that linebacker crew down to Florida. But here's the thing, Rob Lewis, Florida's going in the middle of the football field. A year ago, Mertz was 13 of 16 for 112 yards and a touchdown in the middle of the field. This season, he has 28 passing attempts outside the numbers and 49 passing attempts inside the numbers. Where do you think Florida's going to work the passing game at on Saturday night? It's coming in the middle of the field. So Tennessee's safeties, nickelback, linebackers, if they're going to play zone on third down, particularly on third and long, they're going to have to be better than they were at Arkansas because Florida's going to try to make their living in the middle of the field.
I mean, they had a bad night at Arkansas. And Taylen Green threw – I mean, he threw four or five passes that he's probably never going to throw again in his life. I mean, there were a couple –
Jermon McCoy in defense
I was getting ready to say Jermon McCoy had a couple where I don't know where he could have been in better position and Taylen Green threw him in, but still, I mean, they gave up some. I mean, Hubbard, what was the number, Hubbard, of 20 yard pass plays? I mean, it was big.
It was seven plays of they gave up seven plays of 20 yards or more. Five of those plays were through the air
and to an offense that doesn't do that. Yeah. So, I mean, that's. They got some stuff to tighten up back there.
Well, I mean, listen, if you're going to play zone on third and long, you got to get them on the ground, right? I mean, it's fine to let them throw it in front of the sticks, but you better make the tackles. Arkansas had too many moments across the middle where they threw him moving forward. They threw him and Tennessee didn't tackle it very well because the window was big. Tennessee's just got to tighten things up in the middle because I promise you that's where Florida's coming. They're going to test Tennessee in the middle of the field. And we'll see where Tennessee's defense is on that. And then on the other side, I'm going to be fascinated to see how Florida plays Tennessee. Are they going to load up to stop the run? Because, Grant, as you mentioned, they've had a hard time stopping the run. Are they going to say, you know what, let's see if we can get home with three or four people in a pass rush and see if Tennessee's receivers can in the passing game can beat us. I mean, if anybody would have said early in the year, the game plan is to make Tennessee's passing game beat you. You might have thought, nah. But right now you kind of feel like that's how teams are looking at Tennessee. It's like, hey, we got to take away six and then see if they can go beat us without him because I'm not sure if they can make enough plays. And Tennessee's got to prove that they can.
A lot of coverage leading up to Tennessee and Florida this weekend over VolQuest.com, plus a big recruiting weekend. There will be guys on campus. We'll get that full list in the war room later this weekend and some preview and a lot of reaction from those guys on campus. All that and more. Everything Tennessee football that you need as the Volunteers look to get back on track in a game against Florida, rivalry game, right here at VolQuest.com. Appreciate you guys, as always, for sending in your questions here for the Mailbag Podcast. Big thank you to Exterior Home Solutions for being the presenting sponsor. That phone number for a free estimate is 865-524-5888, online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. They've been local and trusted since 1999 for roofing, garage, siding, whatever the case may be. That is Exterior Home Solutions. For Brent Hubbs, Grant Ramey, Rob Lewis, I am Eric Kane. Thank you guys, as always, for joining us here on the Thursday morning VolQuest Mailbag Podcast.
You've been listening to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on VolQuest.